You've tuned into the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Do you realize what you've done?
With Rich Lee Big.
Aren't you hip to the rap music?
And Michael Costanzo.
The internet was speaking to me in tongues.
Unplanned, unscripted, and slightly unhinged.
Good times, noodle salad.
The point is, you now have the ability to be happy.
And now, here's Rich and Mike on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Doing?
What's up, everybody?
It's time for this week's episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news. Folks, it's our job to give you the most interesting tidbits in the world of sports, entertainment, on news, and whatever else we happen to stumble across. Isn't that right, Mike?
That's right, and we bring it to you with our unique sense of humor and wackiness. You never know what you're going to get here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
That's right, we have a couple of topics prepared in sports, entertainment, and odd news, but, you know, we'll go off the beaten path and talk about something random if the occasion calls for it.
And it usually does.
Yeah, it usually does. So join us along this ride for this meal for your mind. It is the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Thank you for joining us this week. We've got a lot of news and things to get to in all of the topics, I feel like. A pretty jam-packed show full of news for this week. But before we delve into all of the standard stuff, let's go over something personal because we have to do a little recap as to what we've been up to since we last recorded. So, Mike, how you doing? What's up in Costanzo country?
Costanzo country is doing well. We're watching and playing and enjoying a lot of new entertainment releases. I got a chance to finish the Emmy. Yeah, Emmy award-winning. I couldn't remember if it was Emmys or Oscars for a second. I blanked there. The Emmy award-winning show, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
There you go.
I said last week that I had started watching it. I finished it. I didn't realize it was that short, or else I would have like prolonged it a little bit. How long is it? It's only 8 episodes, and each episode's only like 45 minutes.
Well,
so you can like blast through that in
quality over quantity.
Exactly. And let me tell you something. It was spectacular quality. I fell in love with these characters. The main character, Miriam Maisel, Midge Maisel, is just so she's just lovable in every sense of the word lovable. You feel for her plights. You love her witty, snappy dialogue. You have a good sense of where she's coming from and her mentality that sort of goes against the grain in, you know, the early 1950s. And it makes you want to root for her. You know, you see this person trying to stand up for herself against the societal pressures of the time, and it immediately makes you want this person to succeed. The comedy is great. Like I said, very snappy, very witty. Even the dramatic moments. And I was so almost taken aback by this. That, you know, there's serious stuff going on. They're talking about personal relationships and parent child relationships and marriage troubles. And they're doing it in such a way, though, that it still makes you laugh. They're saying something important, and you can't help but laugh at the ridiculousness of how they're saying it and the scenario that they're saying it in. So even the tense moments have that tongue-in-cheek quality sprinkled in throughout, which was really refreshing. But I mean, it's just a superbly done show, from, you know, the set and costume design to the long comedy bits that they have, to the character development and getting a really clear window into these characters' mentalities and what drives them and you know, where the conflict comes from. So I think absolutely deserving of all the awards and all the praise, and I think everybody should give it a shot. It definitely won't be for everybody. Some of the content that it deals with is very, how should I put this, progressive. I shouldn't make it out to be more than it is. It's progressive in the fact that it's very like women's rights and, you know, young independent woman wanting to break out on her own in the 50s, which is, you know, a controversial topic then and might be a controversial topic now. So it might not be for everybody in that regard. And the setting is older. So if you're not a fan of 1950s era style, you know, imagery and concepts, you might not be a huge fan of that, but I think it's well worth a watch. The only thing is that it's on the Amazon streaming service, and I've never used Amazon streaming service for like anything. And so I don't know. It's just not as easy to use as Netflix and Hulu.
Really?
I don't know, maybe I'm old or crazy, but I couldn't figure out how to like fast forward and rewind. I'm like, how does this thing work?
The Prime Video?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I would have thought it would be easy.
The PlayStation 4 version of it. I mean, on the computer, it's just clicking around with a mouse.
Right.
But on the PlayStation, I'm like hitting all the buttons. I'm like, how do you make this thing stop? You know?
Okay.
But, that's just me being stupid. Okay. It's not a knock on the show.
Fair enough.
The show is fantastic, though. So highly recommend it. 9 out of 10. Awesome. I was disappointed how short it was, if anything. The other thing that I've been up to is I've been playing a new virtual reality game called Astrobot Rescue Mission. And this is
okay.
it sounds goofy, and it is it's a cutesy little 3D platformer. Critics are calling it the Super Mario of VR. So I heard that and I was like, okay, this is something that I need to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's going to be as groundbreaking as Super Mario was for Nintendo.
Yeah, and what happens if Bowsette's in it?
Right, you got to make sure you're getting all your primo Bowsette content
right.
as soon as it hits. You had to go back to the Bowsette, didn't you?
Yeah.
Of course you did. If you're wondering what we're talking about, check out the odd news from last week's episode.
Yeah.
It is a trip. But so is Astrobot Rescue Mission. It's fantastic in that it's actually a game. And you're like, you must be thinking that sounds ridiculous. Aren't all VR games games? And that's the problem with virtual reality now and why I haven't been playing it recently is that a lot of quote-unquote games are experiences. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you want to sit down and get involved in something, VR doesn't really have as many lengthy games to play. This is different. It's a full-fledged 3D platformer. You know, it's a big, meaty chunk of entertainment there. Lots of levels, lots of collectibles. And the way in which it uses VR is really unique. So a lot of games force you into, like, first person and, you know, you have to, like, press a button to, like, teleport somewhere or it's, like, clunky movement controls. This game, they're like, screw that. We're not going to do first person. You're going to be a giant robot hovering over the character, and you're going to be helping him. You know, you're controlling him around this environment that wraps around you, okay? So it's above you, it's below you, it's to the sides. You're controlling the character on the screen, but you're also using your controller that has gadgets in it to help him. So you're, like, shooting a grappling hook or using a water gun to grow plants so he can climb onto other platforms. And at certain points, you have to look under or, you know, around corners. Or it does a lot of things with perspective and scale. You know, the bosses are enormous. And the platforming levels are dynamic in that they move and they grow and they shift around you. And that was so cool. There was, like, Jack and the Beanstalk type level where you're helping this little robot climb this giant plant thing.
But are you controlling the robot?
You're controlling the robot, and you in the game are a robot that is helping him with the controller, which is a physical thing in the game as well. So you can see the controller and see the gadgets attached to it. That's why I say it's a unique way of doing VR, where it's not just forcing you into first person and flailing your arms around. You know, it accepts the fact that you want to sit down and play a game and focus on the game, and it uses VR in a non-intrusive, natural way. And the reviewers agree. I mean, this game is going crazy with Metacritic. You know, 9 out of 10s everywhere, and I think it's fantastic. I love playing it. The characters are adorable. The platforming is just the right amount of challenging and puzzling. It's fantastic. So if you haven't picked up VR and you're interested in it, they actually have a bundle right now with this game packed into it. So go check it out.
Okay, so
there
you go.
Two big recommendations right there. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and Astrobot Rescue Mission. That's what I've been up to.
Okay.
What have you been doing, Rich? Have you been doing anything fun recently?
Yeah, I finished Maniac. The series that you recommended on This Week in Entertainment a couple weeks ago.
Yes, I did.
And I loved it.
Yeah, good.
Corey Fukunaga is just a brilliant director. I love everything. I love the first season of True Detective. There are a couple of references in Maniac to it, which I loved. So if you're a fan of True Detective, you're going to be able to point out some of the similarities there. But I enjoyed it. It was an interesting show that messed with the concept of realities and what takes place in your mind. And it's basically kind of just like Inception, but just like gone further off the rails. Because it's a 10-episode miniseries, and when they start to experiment with the reality of the minds that are happening in the characters that Jonah Hill and Emma Stone play, each episode takes like a different theme.
Okay.
So it's interesting. There's one that's like based on kind of like a spy thriller. There's another episode that's based on a fantasy.
Okay.
There's another one that's based on like a casual heist. Another one that's like kind of like a murder mystery party.
It's just like the ultimate genre smash up.
Yeah. Essentially, almost every episode is a different theme.
That's awesome.
And I like that. It was a good variety.
Yeah, that's what originally drew me to it, to feature it in This Week in Entertainment. So one of the questions, though, surrounding it is that a lot of critics said, you know, it's either the best show of 2018 or it's a groundbreaking show or it's too far out there and it's too eclectic. Where do you stand on that spectrum? Is it just a non-point to even make that?
I can see the criticism for it because this is definitely one of those things that doesn't fall into a neat genre.
Right. People have trouble with that sometimes.
Right. So I kind of get that. Like, if there's definitely like a genre that you absolutely despise, you're probably gonna at least run into one episode you're not gonna like then.
Okay.
Like for me, the tough one to kind of get over was like fantasy. It was kind of like
I was gonna ask you how'd you handle the fantasy episode,
but it was fine because they cut that in with another styling, so that doesn't so it's not stale that the whole episode is the one thing.
Right.
I'll leave it at that. I don't want to.
Yeah.
Don't
get too specific because this is the next show I'm moving on to now that Better Call Saul and Marvelous Mrs. Maisel are done.
Yeah. But overall, I liked it. I think if you enjoyed the first season of True Detective and you like Inception, I think you're going to like this series.
Nice.
It's also relatively quick, 10 episodes. You can pretty
Perfect.
Much, you know, get through that in a couple days. And some of the episodes aren't even a full hour. There's a few episodes that I think are 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, there are some, you know, you just speed right through.
It's like a binge this all in one day or over the weekend type show.
Yeah, I think weekend. I think you can do it in a weekend.
Okay.
Probably not a day, but definitely a weekend.
Okay.
And I enjoyed it. I'd give it like a solid B+.
Hey, that's really good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't. I wouldn't say it's the best thing of all time, but
right.
It was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
B+ is well worth a watch, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
B+ is better than 90% of the movies and TV out there.
There's also some fun humor in it as well.
Okay.
There are some parts of it that are kind of like war games, which I really loved.
Well, it is set in like a pseudo futuristic 80s, right?
It's set in modern, like an alternative 2018.
Okay.
Like,
oh, really?
Yeah. And it is funny because there are some like weird displays that are different, and some that are like look more like something from MS-DOS than it does, you know, the future.
I was gonna say the trailer gave it like an 80s vibe.
Yeah, but
it's reimagined 1980s.
It's more an alternate future.
Okay,
so
an alternate future that feels like the 80s.
Yeah, so I enjoyed it. But yeah, I would definitely recommend it for your next Netflix binge if you would like. All right, so there you go. That's all we've been watching for TV and video games. It's time to get to the first segment where we go over all the sports news that we possibly can, and there is certainly a lot right now here in October. It's time for the sports sampler.
So you're not good at sports. It's a very small part of life.
Sports, 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 sports.
In your face! Ha ha!
Sports coming at you in your face. And like I said, October is a very busy time. I love this time of the year personally for sports. Not only are we in the middle of football, and we're going to get to all the football news because there's a lot, but on the flip side, we are in postseason baseball. The playoffs are in full swing. Postseason baseball is just so great. That's when the best of the best, you know, duke it out, and it's just usually just high stakes baseball, and just every decision could you know essentially mean a win or go home scenario for all these games. It's great. But unfortunately, I think if you're a Yankees fan, I don't think you're thinking that way. because the Yankees, I don't know what the hell happened. They had a monumental blunder for Game 3 of the American League Divisional Series. So to try and get you guys caught up to speed here, the American League Division Series is a best of five game series, so you only have to win three games.
Right.
The first two games were split between the Red Sox and the Yankees, so it came down to a crucial Game 3, because obviously you would take the 2-1 lead, and then you only need one more game
right
to win after that. So there's no there's no pretty way of saying this. The Yankees just choked in this one. The final score in Game 3 was a whopping 16-1 score.
Wow, that does not seem like a playoff score.
Yes, that's another thing, too. This is playoffs.
And the Yankees are supposed to be, you know, one of the best all time.
Yes, always known as the Evil Empire. But I found this interesting fun fact. The Red Sox this year have actually spent more money than the Yankees.
That's why they won that game.
The Red Sox have a $228 million payroll. The Yankees have a $180 million payroll. So, I don't know.
That's
I don't know
crazy.
If the Yankees are really the evil empire anymore, because they're not even spending as much as the Red Sox
are. The Red Sox keep putting up scores like 16-1. Maybe they'll steal the evil empire mantle.
Yeah. This was just an ugly game for the Yankees. And this was at home, too. This was at Yankee Stadium. I'm really surprised that this happened.
I'm sure those fans really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I don't think so. So, first off, this was at home for the Yankees. Secondly, this is a playoff game. So the score should have never gotten this out of hand. This is ridiculous. This is almost like when the Eagles beat the Vikings. What was the final score? Like 38-3 or whatever? 41-3?
I think it was like 38-3, 38-7, something
like
that.
Yeah, like just where did that come from?
Yeah.
Well, here is the actual box score dilemma. So here's what happened according to the box score. Everything went to crap in the fourth inning.
Okay.
Luis Severino, who was the hero in the American League wildcard game for the Yankees, put three men on base to open the inning. So already some trouble there without an out. So then they switch pitchers to Lance Lynn, and he comes in for relief. And he immediately walks in a run, which I think
that's
Mike,
like one of the worst things you can do.
I think you know this, Mike. If the bases are loaded, what's the one thing you shouldn't do?
You should not try to walk somebody.
Do not throw balls.
Yeah.
At least put it down the strike zone.
Right. at least make them work for it.
Right. I would rather you, at least try and, at least make them work for it. Yeah, exactly like you said.
Walking in a run should never happen.
Right. So
unless you're trying to lose a game.
So already right there, no good. Then the next batter up hits a two-run double.
Oh, man.
So this guy doesn't even have an out yet, and he already just gave up three runs right then.
So you're telling me he had, at this point, more runs than pitches thrown, probably. No.
Maybe.
No, because the walk is four.
Yeah. Right, so it's four.
Okay.
Anyway, the point is
three runs. Close. It's a lot of runs.
So then he's pulled out. He only got one out. Sorry, there was an out there. One out. And there's men on first and third. Then they switch pitchers again to Chad Green, who gives up an RBI single and then a two-run triple before recording the final out. So for those that didn't keep track there, the Yankees entered the fourth inning down 3-0. They go to the bottom of the fourth inning down 10-0.
That is embarrassing.
That's it. Like, why even bother playing the rest of the game?
I think the team should just leave the field at that point.
Yeah, you're just done. You're not going to come back from that.
So how? What was that? Three pitchers in one inning?
Yes.
And they each got no. They didn't. The first guy didn't even get an out.
Yeah, Luis Severino didn't get an out. Yeah.
Or no, he had one out. What did each of these? It took them one pitcher per out?
Yeah.
If I'm reading this correctly.
Yes.
Oh my God.
And so they're down 10-0 in the fourth inning, and that's all she wrote. You're not coming back from a 10-0 deficit in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's bad.
And the Red Sox story gets even just more heroic, because now we have to talk about their utility player, Brock Holt, who has a very interesting story leading into this Game 3. So Brock Holt is a utility player, meaning that he usually comes in the second half of the game and usually gets in the lineup based on, who's either having a bad game, who's maybe hurt, who's tired.
Right.
He can, do what he can at any position, either infield, catcher, or outfield.
Sort of a jack-of-all-trades type thing.
Correct. And the manager of the Red Sox decided to start him for game three in the seventh position in the lineup, which is really weird for a utility player. And it even caused Brock to text the manager, quote, "You sure I should start game three?" Well, apparently
he's just being honest.
Well, apparently the manager knew something that nobody else did, because Brock Holt hits the first ever cycle in a Major League Baseball postseason game. This is ridiculous. So he starts off his night first up to bat, single, second up to bat, triple, third up to bat, a double.
Wow.
And there's kind there's kind of a superstition, right? You don't want to talk about something historic, right? You don't want to jinx it.
Right. You never mention like the no-hitter or whatever.
Yeah. Right. So usually you wouldn't mention to somebody, hey, you're just a home run away from a cycle, because you have single, triple, double. You just need a homer. Right. Well, apparently he knew that's what everybody was thinking. So he tells his team, quote, "Get me back up to bat. I'm going to hit a homer." And the best part is, in the ninth inning, he wasn't in the next three guys up to bat. They needed somebody to get on base before he could have another shot. So luckily, somebody did get on base, and Brock Holt goes up to bat in the ninth inning. He lived up to his word. He called the homer, and bam, he hits the homer, and he completes the first ever cycle in a Major League Baseball game, or Major League postseason game.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What a story.
Yeah.
Utility player making MLB history there, and doing it with such fashion, too.
Yeah.
By saying, "Are you sure you want to start me?" Then, you know, telling the team, "Make sure I get back up there because I'm going to hit a homer."
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That's definitely something for, I don't know, that should be like a movie or something. That's ridiculous.
Disney's signing the rights right now.
Yeah. So for the Red Sox, this was a glorious night, and this pretty much is going to, you know, unless there's a disastrous collapse by the Red Sox this week, it seems that the Red Sox are going to be moving on in this series. On the flip side, for the Yankees, this is just absolutely horrendous, a horrible way that this game, pretty much everything that could have gone wrong for the Yankees did in this game.
Yeah.
And now this report that came out is even more embarrassing. TBS notes in the production report of the game that the starting pitcher, Luis Severino, may have actually forgotten the time for the first pitch. This is pretty weird if this actually is a thing. They note in the production log that they only saw Severino running out onto the field at 7:32 p.m., First pitch that night was at 7:40 p.m.
Cutting a little close there.
So he only got an 8-minute warm-up session before taking the mound and starting the game. Of course, Severino denies this report, but his stats, man, I don't know. It doesn't bode well for him. His final stats in game three, 3 innings pitch for 7 hits, 6 earned runs, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. If this was a full game, his ERA would have been an 18, which is horrible.
I don't know a lot about baseball, but I know that last one is really bad.
Yeah, not Yankee starter worthy.
No.
So
I find this completely ridiculous that you could be a professional athlete surrounded by other professional athletes going into one of the most high stakes game of the season, and nobody's like, "Hey,
where's the starting pitcher?
Maybe we should go warm up." What is he doing, eating hot dogs at the concession stand?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Where's my Cracker Jacks?
They need to blame this entire series on him if they end up losing.
Yeah. Well, right now, it pretty much looks that way. Unless the Yankees stage a monumental comeback, this is pretty much it for the Yankees.
That's insane.
But yeah, this game three of the ALDS is just when you look at everything from start to finish, it is ridiculous. And I had to mention it on the podcast. It is just really it just ridiculous from Brock Holt to the fourth inning debacle to the whole report that Luis Severino now may have actually forgotten the time for the first pitch of this game. It's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous.
They don't deserve to win.
Yeah,
the Yankees don't deserve to win.
Yeah. So if things continue, it's going to be Red Sox versus Astros in the American League Championship Series. I think that's going to be the secret World Series, because the American League has just been dominating the National League. So
yeah, you were telling me the Red Sox had 108 wins, the Astros had 103, and they're the defending champions. Yep. I mean, that's
It's probably going to be one of those two.
Yeah. Because who are they going to go up against in the World Series?
The Dodgers? The Braves got eliminated.
Oh, did they get eliminated?
Ironically, on Columbus Day.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Sorry. Braves. Go home.
I saw a meme, though, that all three of the Native American-based teams lost on Columbus Day.
Yeah, Redskins also lost Monday Night Football.
The Braves lost.
And who was the third?
The Cleveland Indians.
Oh, that's right. They got eliminated. The Astros beat them. There you go.
And Columbus is still sticking it to them.
Somehow. Even in the sports world.
Even beyond the grave.
Yeah. Okay. We've made it far too long without football talk. Let's get into some football news. And I know the best way for Mike to get into all the football news, especially a couple topics as fast as he can, is the two-minute drill. You ready, Mike?
I'm ready.
All right. I'm arming the clock, and it is a go. What do you have for us, Mike?
All right. This week in the two-minute drill, you got to start off with a little bit of Cleveland Browns news, of course. The Cleveland Browns might be seeing a bit of a resurgence this season. The team is now surprisingly 2-2-1. They have the same record as some other good teams like the Steelers and the Vikings.
Yeah.
You know, so they have technically a better record than the Philadelphia Eagles.
They do.
We'll get into that shortly. It's more than the record. They've been very competitive this season. They've achieved every possible outcome to an NFL game in 5 weeks. They've had five different outcomes. They've tied, they've lost in regulation, they won in regulation, they lost in overtime, and they won in overtime. So they're taking all these games to the limit here. Three of those games ended in overtime. They could very easily have been 4-1 or even 5-0 if you're being really ambitious.
I don't think 5-0, but I'll tell you what. Ever since they started Baker Mayfield, they are a whole different team. That offense is clicking, and the defense is actually now pressuring quarterbacks.
Sometimes it's just the feeling, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the Eagles last year. You just, something clicks.
Yep.
Maybe this could be the start of a Browns resurgence. We'll see. You know who doesn't need any revival is New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees, who passed a major milestone this week by breaking Peyton Manning's all-time passing record of 71,940 yards that he set in 2015. Brees' new record now stands at 72,103 yards. That's just insane. Brees has been a prolific passer, occurring 5,000-yard seasons and records for completions and 300-yard games. He's now only 42 passing touchdowns away from breaking Manning's touchdown record of 539. I think he might own every passing record by the time his career is over.
Yeah, I mean, he's been pretty healthy, so go Drew Brees. So, good job, Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Unfortunately, we have to get into some sad news here, and to kick off the Eagles game recap that we normally have, we're going to start off by talking about this breaking news that happened this week. The Eagles suffered a big setback after they announced that starting running back Jay Ajayi has been placed on IR and will miss the rest of the season with a torn ACL. You know, Ajayi's...
Oh, no! We suck again!
Yeah, yeah. And that clip is especially appropriate for Ajayi because his whole career has been plagued with injury. And even this year, he was trying to play with a fracture in his back. And I'm not saying the fracture in his back led to a torn ACL. That's ridiculous. However, he does have a history of injury, and this seems to be par for the course for the Eagles this year of just getting more and more bad news heaped on them.
Yeah. There's sometimes the injuries don't agree with you, and this is definitely one of them. This comes at a pretty bad time for
last
the Eagles.
Last year, we had that depth. We struggled through the loss of Sproles and Peters and Wentz and Jordan Hicks and a kicker. This year, it just seems like the cards are falling in the wrong direction. There's a tiny bit of a silver lining here, though. The Eagles also were able to restructure defensive tackle Fletcher Cox's mega deal, freeing up several million dollars in cap space. And it's got people speculating, could the Eagles pursue a trade to bolster this running back core that is now missing Ajayi, Sproles, Clement Ben's banged up. Then you got Josh Adams, a relative nobody, and Smallwood, who didn't play past week two last season.
Yeah.
So how important do you think it is for the Eagles to go out there and possibly get a running back? And if you think it is important, what do you make of the two leading candidates, Le'Veon Bell and LeSean McCoy? are the two big rumors floating around right now?
Okay. Well, first off, I think the Le'Veon Bell is off the table. I think Le'Veon Bell is going to demand too much money.
Nick Foles in a second wouldn't do it?
Maybe Nick if Foles, they're willing to trade away Nick
moving
Foles.
Moving Nick Foles' contract would clear up, I think it's $7 to $8 million in cap space.
But
the question, though, isn't 2018, it's 2019.
Right. That I don't see the Eagles having enough cap space to deal with it.
Yeah.
So I don't think Le'Veon Bell's on the table. Maybe, but I don't think it's going to be a thing.
Okay.
But for everybody else, I think it comes down to whether or not Howie Roseman believes that this season still has a chance. If he believes that this season
that's a loaded statement.
It is. If this season is still salvageable, then I think he's going to go out and try and make a last minute trade. In the next week or two, and he's probably going to be looking at either a LeSean McCoy or one of these like top tier running backs that were productive.
I heard David Johnson from
yeah,
Arizona.
That was another one.
Do you think they're going to want to part with him? They just signed him,
right? So I don't know. I think it's going to take a lot for out of Howie Roseman's arsenal to try and lure one of these trade targets to come. But the big factor in my mind is whether or not it's this season or next season. Because the Eagles have a lot of picks in 2019.
Yes, they do.
So the
2 seconds and 2/3, I believe.
Right. So the direction all comes down to whether or not is it worth to sacrifice them right now and trade for a veteran or save them for the draft and draft somebody young in the second and third rounds.
Yeah, I like the point you make about, you know, whether or not this year is salvageable because – we see a lot of teams get better. The Rams got so much better. The Chiefs got so much better. Even our own division. I mean, we're tied for first, technically, but we're all...
We're not? No, the Redskins have a game less because they had a bye week already. So technically, the Redskins are right now on top of the division.
Okay, but in terms of overall wins, everybody only has 2 wins except for the Giants. But yes, you are correct.
Yeah.
With the win percentage aspect. But
by the way, that shows you how bad the NFC East division is.
I know.
Right now.
Well, NFC least again.
Yeah. We're weird.
It really is. We
are somehow every team in our division has won a Super Bowl.
Remember,
we're just atrocious right now.
Remember when they used to call us the NFC Beast?
Yeah. Now we're the
where
least.
Three teams were making the playoffs like every year.
Yep.
And now we're lucky. If it wasn't because of the rules, I don't think any of us would make
not
the playoffs
right now.
This year. With the way these teams are playing. But that goes to your point about whether it's this year or next year. You know, part of me thinks that restructuring Cox's deal is thinking this year type of mentality.
That's a big move.
It's a big move, and it's also when you restructure a deal, it's not like the money disappears. And this is sort of the problem why we're in such a tight cap space is because Howie is a master at maneuvering these contracts. But what he does is he backloads them, and he shifts bonus money, and he shifts guaranteed money around to different years in the contract, and we're getting to the point now where we're in the period of time to which he had previously shifted all the money to restructure people's deals to keep them on a little bit longer. People like Jason Peters, people like Brent Celek, you know, that hung on last year to win a Super Bowl, Brandon Graham. And now we're getting to the point where it's like, uh-oh, all that restructured money is now on the books again.
Yep.
So that's why we're in this.
That's why I don't think Le'Veon Bell. I think Le'Veon Bell is definitely off the table. I don't see that happening.
So we got a little bit. I think we got
David Johnson. I think that's a stretch too.
He has a lot of guarantee. I think it's $30 million guaranteed, and we saved about $6 or $7 million with Cox's restructuring. But that $6 or $7 million doesn't disappear. That gets shifted to 2020, 2021, you know, whenever it may be. So the window is this year and next year because by 2020. We're going to be in a very tight situation. You also have to think about re-signing Brandon Graham. We lost Vinny Curry in the offseason. If we lose Brandon Graham, we're going to be in a bad way. You can't rely on Michael Bennett to be the future of the defensive end position.
No, he's towards the end of his career.
So I would almost advocate, this is going to sound crazy, but not going after a big running back. As much as the name Le'Veon Bell,
as much as it sounds amazing,
I think realistically – too much money. David Johnson, too much guaranteed. Just signed a new contract. We would have to offer Arizona a heap to draw him away. He is the future there. LeSean McCoy brings too much off-the-field baggage. So, and again...
I could see LeSean McCoy, though.
30 years old, he's got an injury, and he could be arrested for assault at any moment.
That's right. That's probably the biggest disadvantages with him. But the Bills probably aren't going to ask for much for him.
I heard they're asking for a second and a third.
Well,
for a 30-year-old McCoy? That's high.
Yeah.
You're, I think you throw a third and you say you're going to be happy with that.
Yeah. You're better off just waiting until he becomes a free agent then.
Right.
I think this year he becomes a free agent too.
I think we do a running back by committee style running back core. So bringing in Le'Veon Bell, that only works if you're going to commit to having him be a three down rusher. You know, it's not going to work with this rotation that we have. We're not running the ball anyway. So
yeah, it's ugly. It's an ugly situation right now.
Which is a good segue, unfortunately.
Yeah.
To the main sports topic of the week, and that is the Eagles game recap. The Philadelphia Eagles lost the NFC Championship rematch to the Minnesota Vikings 23-20. Rich, this was...
Oh, no! We suck again!
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
I think we should just leave it at that. I think that's pretty much what we felt.
Yeah. I mean, it's... I've been using the word disgusting lately to describe these games, and I think that still stands here. In the rundown, I literally have nothing for good. I don't know. Did you see anything good there?
Kicking game was strong.
Really?
Yay.
Okay. Well, they didn't let Elliott go for a 57-yarder, though. You know, it's moments like that. I feel like the team has just lost a step. They're either not as aggressive, or they're not as game planned enough. There's something going on here, starting with the coaching and going down. Last season, Doug Peterson would have been like, 57 yards, get out there. We're definitely kicking that field goal.
Yeah,
We punted.
Uh-huh. It's a little discouraging. I think there is some truth to that. I think Peterson has been a little more controversial, especially that game last week with the Titans. He was way too conservative that he's used to.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. So
we're not running the ball like we used to, you know, going from one of the you know, top five rushing offenses to, you know, I don't know. I don't have the stats in front of you. I don't think we're running the ball at all.
Yeah. It was just bad all around. And
we had 81 rushing yards.
Not good. Not good.
More than a quarter of that came from Carson Wentz.
Not good.
What does that tell you? And people are saying, well, you know, what about the defense? Do we have any positives? What about the defense? Well, on the defensive side of the ball, we held the Vikings to 7-7 yards rushing. That's great. Awesome. Kirk Cousins completed 30 of 37 passes. Death by 1,000 cuts. Like 80% of them were under 5 yards.
Right, but that's enough to keep the drives alive.
Right, because, and this goes back to the coaching and scheme issue that I think it all stems from. I think they've cracked our defense. These teams, we were losing these games. Marcus Mariota put up 350 yards. When we played Tennessee, Kirk Cousins put up 300 yards, and they're all throwing under 5 yards.
Nobody's throwing bombs.
One or two big passes, but they've cracked our defense. He had, I forget what the specific number was, but I think it was like 2.5 seconds from snap to throw. And the defense just can't get there that quick.
Yep.
And the corners, because they're playing 10 yards off, that's the scheme. That's not Jalen Mills saying, I'm going to wait 10 yards back. Jim Schwartz's scheme is don't give up anything big. Let the front four get to the quarterback. The problem is, when every single passing route is a slant or an out, it is almost impossible to defend that playing 10 yards off. I have some key stats here. From 1933 through 2017, only one quarterback completed more than 80% of his passes against the Eagles. That was Peyton Manning. Two have done it in the last 4 weeks.
Yeah, that's... atrocious.
Isn't it?
That's atrocious.
Isn't that... And Ryan Fitzpatrick and Kirk Cousins. This is not Tom Brady. This is not Drew Brees. It's Ryan Fitzpatrick completed 82% of his passes against us.
Yeah. I mean, that's the proper adjustment, though. If you've got a front four that's coming at your quarterback, get the ball out early.
Yeah.
And the Eagles haven't made their counter adjustments to that. So it's definitely disturbing.
Jim Schwartz needs to get his head out of his ass and come up with a different scheme or a correction or start calling more blitzes or do something different. And on the other side of the ball, the offense, people are like, oh, Carson Wentz is missing a step. I would argue it's the offensive line that's missing a step.
Yeah.
The Eagles...
They're not blocking for him.
I got another stat here, and this perfectly sums it up. Last year, The Eagles allowed 15 sacks in their last 12 games.
Whoa.
The Eagles have allowed 15 sacks in their last four games this season.
Yeah. Not gonna be doing good if your quarterback's hitting the dirt.
No. It all Andy Reid, I tell you.
Andy Reid.
He starts at the line of scrimmage.
That's right.
Starts with the lines. And as a disciple, Doug Peterson needs to get in Jim Schwartz's ear. He needs to talk to Howie Roseman and say, we need to fix this problem up front.
So, yeah, there you go. Pretty much nothing good happening for the Eagles in their loss to the Vikings, 23-20. And it could get worse, but we'll get to that in the Fantastic Four picks for week number six. But I have to go over my segment now in this portion of the Sports Sampler. Time for my fantasy football advice because, of course, you know, we're in the middle of things now. We're now five games into the fantasy football season. Hopefully you're doing well. The big development, I think, happening in for most fantasy teams now heading into week six is bye weeks are going to start affecting you. You know, the bye weeks, you know, teams got to take a break. But as a result, your star players, they're not going to be producing for you when the team's on bye. So as a result, you got to dig deep. You got to look for just kind of oddball players that may produce randomly for this 1 week or whatever week your major troublesome week is going to be. Most programs, either Yahoo, ESPN, have a feature where it lists the bye weeks of your players and which bye week is going to be the most problematic for you based on how many players are going to be gone during that week specifically. So, for example, for me, I'm losing three of my players this week in week six because they're
going
on bye.
That's a lot of players.
It is. But that's when you got to dig deep and you got to find, you know, some targets, either free agency or on the waiver wire. And this is when you throw fear out the window. You got to, you know, you got to plug somebody that you just got to hope for the best with. So right now, on the heels of the Ajayi injury announcement, Corey Clement and Wendell Smallwood are big pickups right now.
Yep.
If they are available right now, claim them for week six, especially if you don't have a running back. So it's stuff like that you got to be aware of, and just plug and play and hopefully it works. I mean, that's part of the challenge of fantasy football is you got to deal with these random bye weeks. It causes you to think outside of the box, but that's the game. That's fantasy football for you. So this is the time to go bonkers because the bye weeks don't stop. Week six to week 11, I believe, off the top of my head. So
yeah. It's pretty much the whole fantasy football season, isn't it?
Most of it, yeah. Well, at least the second half of it.
Right.
Yeah, so, find if it's this week or a bye week coming up, make sure you plan accordingly because at some point you're going to have a troublesome week with all the byes happening. So make sure you go for it, you dig deep, you find, you do your research, you find a free agent, find somebody on waivers, and just go for it. So there you go, my fantasy football advice for this week. Now it's time to get to more predictions, not fantasy football related, but straight up pick'ems for week number six. We'll call it the Fantastic Four Picks.
All right.
Yep, let's get to them. What's our Fantastic Four
this
picks
week
for week six?
Well, first up, we have a really good AFC North rivalry. Two teams fighting to stay alive in their division. The Pittsburgh Steelers are barely hanging on at 2-2-1. Meanwhile, the Cincinnati Bengals are in control at 4-1. Rich, who do you think is going to win this heated rivalry?
The Steelers right now are just barely holding it together right now. I don't care what you say. I believe the Le'Veon Bell thing has been a distraction in the locker room.
What about the Antonio Brown thing, too?
Yeah,
I mean, he's not doing so well.
I mean, he at least got a touchdown finally last week.
They have a tie on their record.
Well, hey, right now they got to take any positives. But I'll tell you what, the Bengals are actually looking pretty good. Andy Dalton is leading the charge on that offense. And they're developing some new young talent. Especially in Tyler Boyd. He's another fantasy option, if you will. If he's available in your league, I would recommend you grab him this week. I'm going to go with Bengals at home.
Yeah, the Bengals continue to impress. They always start seasons pretty hot. And playing at home, they're going to be a little bit more comfortable probably. And I just don't have a lot of confidence in the Steelers. I really don't. Whenever I see a tie on a record, to me it indicates just a fundamental breakdown somewhere of this team that they can't even score a field goal when they need it most. They can't dig deep enough. I'm going to go with the Bengals. Plain and simple.
Sounds good.
Next up, we have a big question here in this matchup. That's how shocked I am, though. Do we have to start taking these teams seriously now as the Chicago Bears travel to Miami to face off against the Dolphins? Both these teams surprisingly good this year. The Chicago Bears at 3-1 and the Dolphins at 3-2. Both of them are making pretty good strides. Rich, who do you think is going to come out on top in this one?
Dolphins, I say don't take seriously because they still got their ass whooped by New England. So until they ever beat them, I don't think anybody is serious in that division besides the Patriots. On the flip side, though, the Bears are the real deal. Things are just coming together right now for that Bears team. Mitchell Trubisky's having a pretty solid year. Not amazing year, but a pretty solid year. But the big story, man, is that defense. That defense is relentless. They were already a good defense. The moment they got Khalil Mack, they became an elite defense. They are scaring offenses left and right. And I would not want to face the Bears right now, so I'm going with the Bears in this one.
Yeah, to be specific, the second overall defense. But not only that, I know you said Mitchell Trubisky is doing all right, but what I'm looking at is the running game. They have the 9th-ranked rushing offense, and the Dolphins aren't spectacular on defense. Even though they're at home, the Bears right now are looking really dangerous. So I like the Bears in this matchup. I think we definitely have to take them seriously.
Yep.
But when there's danger afoot, sometimes you have to ask, you know, maybe we need a new sheriff in town. And that brings us to the next matchup. Pat Mahomes, is he the new sheriff in town in the AFC after Tom Brady is now in the decline of his career? The 5-0 Chiefs are traveling to New England to face off against the Patriots. Is this a passing of the torch? Is Pat Mahomes the new big deal in the AFC? Who do you think wins this one?
This one's always interesting because somehow Andy Reid...
I feel like every year.
Andy Reid, in like games that like somewhat don't really, you know, aren't like the end-all, be-all games, he always does well against Bill Belichick. So between that fact and the fact that Patrick Mahomes right now is looking like a video game cheat code that you would use in Madden, I think the Chiefs are going to take this one. But, you know, it is New England, so I'm not 100% on it. But I'll take the young gun. I'll say it will be a new sheriff for Patrick Mahomes.
I'm 100%. Last year, I distinctly remember this game because I said, I believe in Big Red. The Chiefs are going to beat the Patriots, and they whooped them 42-27. This year, I'm doing it again. I think the Chiefs have the Patriots' number. The Patriots are struggling a little bit on the offense, even with the addition of Josh Gordon. Meanwhile, the Chiefs look spectacular. They do have the 32nd-ranked defense, but, you know, they were able to go toe-to-toe with the Jags. So I'm going to go with the Chiefs here. Finally, we have the hometown team, Philadelphia Eagles, traveling to the Meadowlands to face off against the New York Giants. Rich, this is a Thursday night game. If you're watching this after listening to the podcast when it comes out, you may already know what's going on. But, Rich, use your foresight. Use that magic ball to tell us who's going to win this one.
I'm going to say it's a tie.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to do that.
Look, these two teams right now are underperforming so bad right now. I really do not know which way to go in this one. It's going to be a division game, so anything's possible. But just these teams are – just everybody in the NFC East is just underperforming so bad right now. I guess the Eagles will get a slight advantage because they have a slightly better defense. But I don't know, man. This is just atrocious all the way around. I'll go with the Eagles just slightly, though. Man. It would not surprise me if this game ends in a tie.
Look, if there's one thing I know about the Giants is that Eli Manning is Captain Checkdown over here. And right now, Captain Checkdown is whooping our asses.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with the Giants. I already know the game plan. It's just going to be 400 slants thrown to Odell Beckham Jr. all game. Jalen Mills can't keep up with them. Ronald Darby is going to be playing 12 yards off the line of scrimmage. It's going to be ugly. We barely beat them last year. So twice, barely beat them twice last year. I think the Giants have got this one. Sure, why not? Let's tie up the records at 2-4 apiece.
Wow. There
let's continue to continue the downslide.
Okay.
This is a must win for the Eagles.
Yeah. They fall to
this
2-4.
Is a
it's
must
over.
Must win.
It's over. So there you go. Our fantastic four picks for week number 6 of the NFL season. Yeah, it's not looking good.
I feel like a friggin'
short week.
I feel like a friggin' seesaw over here.
Yeah.
Last year, you know, 2 years ago, I was, you know, so down on the Eagles. Then last year, the only thing I'd say was, it's different, Rich. It's different. I'm telling you, it's
you
different.
You did. You know what? You did call it last year.
And this year, we're going right back to what we were in 2016. No! I can't take this, Eagles. No! My heart.
What happened?
I have a history of heart disease in my family. You can't do this.
Mike's going to have a heart attack.
They're going to kill me.
No, we need to have a podcast.
I can't keep up the back and forth, Eagles.
Okay, well.
Either suck or be good. Pick one.
All right, well, Mike's about to have a heart attack, so we need to calm him down. So while we take a break, make sure you don't go anywhere because we still got the entertainment entree. And then the non-fortune cookie odd news. We still have a lot of show coming up. We'll be right back.
The Crispy Noodle. Always crunching.
Hey, what do you hear? What do you say, man? Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Google Plus, your sister's ass, the punishment. Very pissed off six here. You know what ticks me off? Everybody's got a podcast. Everybody's got a podcast. But no podcast ever asked me to be on but the Crispy Noodle podcast. That's what pissed me off. Podcast that don't ask me.
This is Guardian Shield, and you are listening to the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Oh, yeah, we are back here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast. So, you know, we have our little segments here. We do sports, entertainment, and odd news. And technically, we did wrap up the sports sampler, but, you know, sometimes things bleed into one another. And there's something that I left out that I wanted to test Mike on. It was a random stat that I found that I came across, and I meant to ask Mike in the sports sampler, but there's so many things that happened in sports sampler that I forgot to get to it, so I'm going to get to it right now.
Okay.
In football, there's the quarterback sneak, right, Mike?
Right. Right, of course. That's where the quarterback usually under center, and the center snaps it to the quarterback, and the quarterback just sort of dives forward to try and gain a quick yard or two.
Right. According to NFL stats, they researched the last 70 times that a quarterback sneak was called on 4th and 1.
Okay.
So this is from 2016 to 2018, the last 70 times a quarterback sneak was called on a 4th and 1. What do you think the success rate was?
Now, you see, this is a trick question because it wouldn't be a question unless it was something ridiculous like 70 for 70 or the opposite of that and be ridiculously low, like 20 out of 70, because it's a play you think is... Oh, you had to make it stressful.
Mike is thinking this through and through.
Because it wouldn't be a question if it wasn't a trick question.
I'm just adding to your heart attack now. You're just
the universe is just trying to kill me. It's like, come on, universe, I can take it. God. I'm gonna split the difference and say that it was converted 35 of 70 times.
You're saying half.
Half, yeah. I feel like that's low, but I also feel like it's a trick question.
It's a 4th and 1, and they're calling quarterback sneak.
No, I changed my mind. It's probably 68 out of 70. Ridiculously high. I was right the first time, wasn't I? I don't know what to do, Rich. Just tell me the answer.
So what's your final answer?
Oh, man.
I am playing the millionaire music. So.
I know you were playing the millionaire music. This is the final one, too. I'm going to say it's somewhere in the 60s, probably. 60s out of 70.
Give me a number.
Oh, come on.
Give me a number!
Let's go with something stupidly high. 67, 68 out of 70 times.
What number?
68.
I need a number.
I said 68.
68, that's your final answer.
Yes, 68.
So the reason why I bring this up is because you're a big fan of being more aggressive and going for it on fourth down.
Right. Okay, I see where this is going now.
You're absolutely right.
Oh, I am?
Yes. The last 70 times a quarterback sneak has been called on a fourth and one in the NFL, 67 times it has been successful.
I said 67 or 68.
Yeah.
And then I switched to 68. Damn it.
Yeah. So that's a conversion rate of 95.7%
wow.
of the time. So
always
now,
go for you got to be aggressive.
So now, yeah, I'm always going to be like, go for it on fourth and one. Just freaking just call a quarterback sneak.
Think about the design of the play. Okay, there is a neutral zone which defenders cannot cross into. If you're fourth and one, that neutral zone is basically the entire length you need to go for your first down, right?
Yes.
They can't get any closer. So all the center has to do is have a good snap and fall forward. Just snap and immediately fall forward, and the quarterback just falls right on top of him. That's a conversion. It's like the most stupidly easy play. The only time you see fourth and ones fail is when they try to hand it off to a running back, and the defense has time to swarm and create a wall.
Yes. And one more reason I bring this up is because the Cowboys punted on a fourth and one overtime.
Oh, my God. You never punt in overtime.
On Sunday night. And Jason Garrett, his response in the press conference was, quote, "Well, it was a long yard."
Get the F out of here.
You know what? Keep Jason Garrett
Actually, you know what? That was
leave him as the coach.
That was the right decision, Garrett.
Yeah.
That was the right decision. Don't listen to us. We're wrong.
Leave him as the coach, and that way the Cowboys will lose
the stats.
The
stats are wrong. They're all about fake news in Dallas. That's fake news.
So there you go. That was one last topic I wanted to bring up in the sports sampler. That was just ridiculous.
Let me just ask a question. Do you happen to know the yard line they were at when they punted?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay.
It was an overtime. Like, you should have went for it. Come on.
If you're between the 40s and it's overtime, that is absolutely four down territory 100% of the time.
Yeah, it's overtime.
You got nothing left to lose. Yeah.
So, it was a long yard.
Get out of here. Yeah, I get it. You have Ezekiel Elliott! Oh, I'm even angrier now. We have friggin' broken back, broken knee Ajayi. And Doug Peterson is calling, you know, fourth down plays. And
keep clapping on the sidelines.
Yeah.
That's your coaching.
Maybe we'll get to 8-8 again.
Okay.
Anyway, you just had to get me even
angry. I had to throw that in because I wanted to mention that in sports sampler.
That's good, though.
But now it's time to get to the real middle of the show. We have to talk about movies, TV, and video games. It's time for the entertainment entree.
And now, the latest in movies.
The Simpson guy writes to movies. "Dear Die Hard, you rock. Especially when that guy was on the roof."
Music.
"I know what that is. That's music."
Video games.
"I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite store on the Citadel."
Celebrities.
"You really know Warren Beatty?"
"Yes, I do. I took a leak next to him once at the Golden Globes."
And more.
"Who are they all singing all dancing crap at the world?"
This is the Entertainment Entree.
Que te va a ser pupita.
Yes, so...
Okay, that's a classic clip.
Right. Sometimes in my free time, I like to research Telemundo and Spanish broadcasts.
Of course you do.
Because they're more animated.
That doesn't shock me in the least.
Yes, I love it. They're usually just more animated, and I just love the clips I can pull
right
from those broadcasts. That's a classic one involving a horse.
Yeah, that's a horse, by the way, people.
Yeah.
That sound.
Que te va a ser pupita.
Oh. Yeah, I just so horse. I love that clip. But someone sent this to me. Again, it actually has to do with sports, so I'm sorry this is bleeding the entertainment entree.
We're just going to become a sports podcast.
But this is just great. This was the Spanish radio announcers calling the game-winning field goal in the Giants versus Panthers game. Ooh. Last Sunday. The Panthers were down by a single point with 2 seconds left to go on the clock, and they sent out Graham Gano to kick the game-winning field goal. And this Spanish commentary is amazing. So get pumped. Here it is.
Le ha sobrado distancia. Le van a servir. Tiene altura. Tiene profundidad. Va a llegar. Va a llegar. ¡Ganó lo ganó! 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 ¡Señor! ¡Ganó lo ganó! ¡Ganó lo ganó! ¡Yo sí le voy! ¡Le voy a los Panthers! ¡Taca, taca, 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 taca! ¡Yo sí le voy! ¡Le voy a los Panthers!
¡Yes!
Is he breaking the song?
I think so. In the middle of that. That was
he was like,
great.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
¡Ganó lo ganó! ¡Ganó lo ganó!
Yeah,
it's like a song. I don't
know. Adding a little beat into the commentary.
Ganó lo ganó, ganó lo ganó. Yo sí le voy a los Panthers. Taca, 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 taca.
Yeah.
Now, isn't that a million times better than Joe Buck?
Ganó lo ganó.
What is that?
I have no idea, but that's what he's saying in Spanish.
Ganó
lo ganó.
I mean, he's just saying the guy's name.
Ganar means to win, so ganó. Is Gano won it? So actually,
Gano won it.
Right, Gano Logano means Gano won the game.
Wow,
Gano Logano. That should be a song. Gano Logano, Gano Logano, Gano. Yeah, there you go. That's why he's singing it. It sounds like it should be.
Dude's name literally means one.
Gano Logano, Gano Logano.
Yeah, so there you go. Gone low, gone, gone low, gone. Yeah.
Why can't we have exciting announcers like that?
Yeah, screw Joe Buck. I'm sick and tired of
him. We have announcers here where, you know, I've seen Eagles games where they're like, and they scored. It seems they're in the end zone and points will be added to the scoreboard now. And it's like, really?
I want them.
Really?
Give me the Spanish announcers.
Go dip your hand in the fryer, Joe Buck.
Gone low, gone low, gone. Now it's going to be stuck in my head.
Yeah, gone low, yeah.
Yeah. I like it. Put them on the broadcast.
Also, the Giants must be suffering now. How many games can you lose in the last seconds by a 60-plus yard field goal without going crazy?
Yeah, it happens all the time, apparently.
They're like, come on, guys.
Ganó lo ganó! Ganó lo ganó! Yo sí le voy a los Panthers! ¡Taca, taca, 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 taca!
Yeah! Joe Buck sucks. Spanish radio announcers, you to bomb. Now let's get to the portion of the show where Mike lets you know what's coming up this week for upcoming movies, TV, and video games. It's time for Mike's This Week in Entertainment. Yeah, so, Mike, what do you have for us?
All right.
You better be pumped.
Well, this is something to get excited about. I mean, this is a very historic moment in U.S. history. This movie coming out, First Man, is a new movie from Academy Award-winning director Damien Chazelle, starring Ryan Gosling. Set in the 1960s, this drama tells the true story of NASA's mission to land a man on the moon, focusing on the life and sacrifices of Neil Armstrong. Right now has an 89% on Rotten Tomatoes with an average rating of 8 out of 10 over 100 reviewers. So it's already, I think, poised as bait for some Oscar nods right here. I mean, period drama. It's got the pseudo-nationalistic thing going on with, you know, America's so awesome, landing people on the moon. It's got Ryan Gosling in it, Damien Chazelle. This clear Oscar bait. It's making a good name for itself in this fall drama season, so go check it out. First Man in theaters this week. Also, not in theaters, though, The Kindergarten Teacher is a Netflix original movie starring Maggie Gyllenhaal as a kindergarten teacher who becomes obsessed with mentoring a child poet prodigy. But things take a dark turn when she takes it too far, risking career, family, and freedom as she tries to protect the child from neglectful parents and nurture the child's artistic promise. I think she kidnaps a kindergartner and forces him to do poetry.
So it sounds weird.
It is weird, and that's why I'm featuring it, because it seems interesting as well. So go check out The Kindergarten Teacher on Netflix. They have movies as well, too, now. Also on Netflix, actually, that brings me to the TV show this week, The Haunting of Hill House. If you're looking for something for the Halloween season, check this one out. It's a psychological horror Netflix original based on the revered Shirley Jackson novel by the same name. Flashing between past and present, it tells the tale of a group of siblings who grew up in a fabled haunted house and are forced back together by tragedy to confront their past ghosts, both mental and possibly real. It's getting a lot of good press so far. The book itself is renowned as one of the best of all time. The trailer looks super creepy. Maybe a little too creepy for me personally.
Oh!
Yeah, but if you're looking for something fun to watch... Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of horror, but it is very intriguing. I might watch it anyway and just deal with it. But if you're looking for something scary over the Halloween season, go check it out. Finally, in video games, The Occupation comes to PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. It's a single-player stealth adventure game, and you'll like this, in which the player is a journalist attempting to uncover secret information on a controversial law passed in the wake of a terrorist attack in the UK. The defining characteristic of this game, and this sounds really cool, is that it takes place in one location, a government building, over the course of 4 hours in real time. So however long it takes you to do stuff is how long it actually takes you in the game. And the game ends regardless of whether or not you accomplish your mission in 4 hours. And the way it handles fail states and the player getting caught or, you know, messing up is that they're sent to a security room and it deducts time from your overall time. So you're racing against the clock from start to finish, and everything you do is another second that you're not getting information to meet that four-hour deadline. Seems super interesting, yeah. And I like the whole journalism investigative thing. Super creative, super original for video games. That's The Occupation on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC coming out this week. And I can tell you're about to go buy a PlayStation Network card after this recording because you're super intrigued.
So basically the currency is time.
Yes.
So do I have to...
Your currency and your life is basically time.
Do I have to block out like 4 hours and then like whatever goes...
No, I think you can save and come back to it, but, you know, when you're playing, the time is always ticking down that four-hour mark.
Huh.
So if you want it to be, it can be a single playthrough. It could be a couple different playthroughs. You can play through a bunch of times because the ending apparently changes based on how much information you get and whether you accomplish your goals or not. You can sneak. You can interview people. You can rough up people, apparently. I mean, not rough up because it's an adventure game. But, yeah, super, super creative.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check this one out.
I think I will, too.
Yeah. If you're looking for something a little bit more fast-paced, though, Call of Duty Black Ops 4 comes to PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. This is like the opposite end of the spectrum.
If you don't like journalism...
just shoot everything.
Yeah,
just shoot everything.
Let's shoot some stuff.
And this is a... I mean, one of the biggest franchises in the shooting genre. It's the fifth game in the Black Ops series and the 15th main game in the Call of Duty franchise. But it's also a first for the series as the game does away with the single-player campaign in favor of focusing on the new Battle Royale mode, 50 versus 50, or 100-person free-for-all. It also has a zombie game mode and, of course, that traditional multiplayer that has made Call of Duty so popular. Reviews aren't out yet, but it should sell in the several millions of copies, so there will be no shortage of players to play this online-only Call of Duty, the first in the franchise. And that wraps it up for this week in entertainment.
All right, Mike, thank you for that segment, This Week in Entertainment. We got a couple of updates to get to in the entertainment entree, and the first one has been a regular reoccurring story that we've been covering for the last couple of weeks, ever since this broke. It has to deal with one of our favorite games, Telltale Games.
So this update is very exciting for us. Telltale Games has reached a deal with Skybound Games, which is a subsidiary of Robert Kirkman's company, Robert Kirkman, the creator of The Walking Dead, in order to finish The Walking Dead, the final season.
Hiya!
Tough look me. Boobies. Boobies.
What does this guy think? He's an Indian?
Like, fresh eyes?
She's a human!
Oh, man. Thankfully, somebody has signed on so that this series gets finished, finally.
Yeah, this is huge news for fans. So, a little bit of background. Skybound owns the rights to The Walking Dead because it's Robert Kirkman's company. Skybound Games is the, I guess, semi-publisher of the series, and Telltale was the developer. Skybound is stepping in now and saying, okay, I guess we'll do development too, and they're going to rehire the original Walking Dead team on short-term contracts to finish episodes 3 and 4, which apparently are very close to completion because they're supposed to come out in November and December. So this is like coming down to the wire. I expect they'll probably be delayed a little bit, but this is great news. Everybody is really excited about this. Robert Kirkman especially, he said, quote, I love this, quote, we can't lose Rick and Clem in the same year.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're stepping up to save this franchise that means so much to gamers and fans of it. But also begs this new question. In the wake of Telltale imploding, could we see almost a weird sort of silver lining in a resurgence or a new birth of narrative developers emerge to fill this void? Skybound, this is going to be their first time running development. They've always published The Walking Dead games, but now they're going to say, all right, we'll just hire the developers and take a crack at it. Meanwhile, Netflix says they're committed to bringing Stranger Things, another abandoned Telltale game, and I guess they're either going to develop it themselves or hire other developers. And they have the kind of FU money to throw at a video game development studio. They have, you know, devoted tens of billions of dollars to original programming. So could we see Skybound and Netflix now get into game development? It almost seems like a natural evolution here.
Yeah, and I mean, if you've got a big supporter like Netflix coming your way, I don't see what the disadvantage would be to accepting it.
Yeah.
Especially if you're already going to host the old Telltale producers and developers. I mean, why not just keep them and have like that own their own wing and let them produce those games?
Yeah, I think Skybound is, both these companies, Skybound and Netflix, are
especially for Stranger Things, you're going to get a lot of buys on that.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think these two companies are poised to make a stake in this genre that now has this empty void. You know, if Netflix says we have so many properties we can make games out of, you know, and maybe they team up with Skybound, who has experience with it. Maybe they go together in this thing, and Skybound can turn, think about all of Robert Kirkman's Walking Dead universe, and he has other, you know, dark fantasy comics and everything. I mean, I feel like there's a void here to be filled, and Skybound and Netflix are now the leading candidates to jump in and just do what they want with this genre now that Telltale has imploded and left all these franchises, you know, scattered in the wind.
Yeah, I don't see what the disadvantage would be.
Yeah. So here are please, Skybound and Netflix, pick up a few of those games that were in development.
Do it.
Exactly.
You're already going to do it with Walking Dead. You might as well do it with Stranger Things and anything else Netflix wants.
Exactly. I say keep going. But in terms of just doing it, though, there is another update that we have to talk about. We talked about this a few weeks, maybe a month ago, and this is about Sony and a couple of big announcements they've had recently. We mentioned that there was a little bit of a controversy about Sony not allowing cross-play multiplayer on their consoles. Cross-play is when, say, an Xbox player can play with a Nintendo Switch player, but PlayStation was always left out of this. They always said it's not right. It's not the best situation for the gamer. However, recently it seems Sony is walking back on that statement in a big way, as they have enabled cross-play multiplayer functionality, saying, quote, that they've identified a path toward supporting cross-platform features for select third-party games. The first test candidate will be Fortnite, the person who started all of this, or the game that started all this. People upset they couldn't play with their friends on all the different devices and transfer their online progress from one platform to the next. There's currently a beta going on right now with Fortnite cross-play.
All the kids are playing it.
Literally, because you now have PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, PC, Mac, iOS, and Android all playing together. And you know what? That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that
isn't
is pretty
it,
cool.
Isn't it pretty neat? Like, that's literally any device you have, you can play Fortnite with any friend who has it on any other device. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, and very marketable for Fortnite.
Yes, it is. Fortnite is just greedily licking their lips and wringing their hands. They can't
Excellent.
Wait. They can't wait. But, I mean, the big thing here is, like, this is such a new tact from Sony, who has been so close-minded to this, always rejecting it, always saying, you know, it's not right for the players. Are we seeing a more open Sony? Is this a positive step forward for the company, or is this just sort of appeasing the Fortnite crowd and then they'll sort of let it go by the wayside?
Well, I think this is actually in the long run going to be great for Sony. I mean, one of the things that sucks is, like, I'm a big fan of Grand Theft Auto Online.
Yeah.
I can't play with somebody who has the Xbox version of Grand Theft Auto Online.
Yeah.
So this would be like a great bridge to connect everything with.
Absolutely. Especially with Red Dead Redemption 2.
Red Dead Redemption 2, yeah,
Red
coming out.
Red Dead Online. And
that's right.
Come on, guys. Let's get this up and running.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. Now, you know, a few weeks ago we had said it's not that big a deal because most gamers aren't aware of it. But I have to say, I very rarely say this, so brace yourselves, but I was wrong. Apparently.
What?
I know. I was.
What?
I'm never wrong.
What is happening here?
I remember when Michael was a bitch. And now he's still a bitch. Michael's a bitch. Michael's a bitch. He is a bitch. Yeah, you know it. Woo!
There you go. Bruno is happy.
I kind of have to agree here. I think we were a little bit off the mark. I mean, us personally, it doesn't matter.
Right. Because I stick to single player.
Right. And I guess when we were talking about it, most of the gamers I've ever talked to, you know, that they don't really pay that much attention to it. But I guess there were enough people paying attention that it forced Sony's hand here to change. And I think it's change for the positive. Anytime you open up a system, it's usually better.
Yeah.
You know, so hopefully this continues that trend, and hopefully Sony will be more, you know, open-minded towards other things companies are doing, like backwards compatibility.
That would be pretty nice.
For the impending PlayStation 5 reveal, which brings us to the next topic. They didn't reveal PlayStation 5.
No, not yet.
Just to curb everybody's enthusiasm there. But they did announce that they are not holding a PlayStation Experience conference this year. And the reason why this is newsworthy is because they've held this conference for 4 straight years as a PlayStation-only conference that was sort of a celebration of everything PlayStation. They revealed exclusives, they had cool new content, they hyped everybody up, made big announcements, and this year, like, we're not going to do it. And so immediately, online went, hey, they're about to announce PlayStation 5. I don't know. It does make sense, though, because when you break it down, think about all the exclusives. Dreams, Days Gone, Last of Us 2, Death Stranding, and Ghost of Tsushima. They're all announced. And every company that doesn't have an exclusive in the works for next year has already released Detroit Become Human, God of War, Spider-Man. So the games are either out, like just out, or they're in development. So all the developers are accounted for. There's nobody that could possibly have a game ready to announce in December for 2019. So that means they're either working on supporting the current titles or they're working on PlayStation 5 titles. And I think, mark my words here, we are very close. I think sometime between February and E3 of 2019, we're going to get a PlayStation 5 reveal. That's the only reason that they would cancel this event.
Uh-oh. It's time?
Well, if you figure 2020 is the date everybody's throwing around for the launch of the PlayStation 5, E3 would be the perfect time.
How old is the PlayStation 4?
I think it came out in 2013.
A seven-year lifespan, 13 to 20?
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, exactly. I can't. My computer's not working. I'm trying to search for something, and I accidentally opened a program, and now it's
fun.
Oh my god!
But anyway, I would say that sounds about the right time frame. It does seem a little odd that they canceled the PlayStation Experience conference. It does seem to be that there's a pattern here emerging for the emergence of some sort of big news, big announcement in 2019.
Yeah, I think all signs point to it. So stay tuned.
Save your money.
Save your money. I'm collecting Best Buy gift cards right now, actually.
We're going to have to get ready to pay for a PlayStation 5 soon.
Yeah, and it's going to be expensive.
Yeah.
It's going to be expensive. You know what else was expensive? Was what? Venom. The new Marvel Sony made superhero movie.
Yes. So you saw Venom.
I saw Venom.
It's in your beloved Spider-Man universe.
It is. I love the Spider-Man universe. Venom is one of my favorite villains of all time.
So what do you think?
I'll say this. Sometimes
is this spoiler territory or no?
Yeah, because I'm gonna talk.
So spoiler?
Yeah, spoiler.
It's a spoiler. Ooh, it's a spoiler. Don't listen. Go away.
Yeah, because I'm gonna reveal some stuff here.
Okay, but, so if you haven't seen it and you want to see it, skip to the odd news.
Yeah. So I'll just start off by saying, you know, Venom is strange because when you look on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 30% from the critics, but an 89% from the fans. And usually what happens is with two drastically different scores like that, sometimes a movie is poorly received by critics and it goes on to become like a pop culture phenomenon and ascends to a new level, sort of like It's a Wonderful Life or I can't remember the name of it now. Tyler Durden. What is that?
Fight Club.
Fight Club. Yeah, critically panned, but it holds this special place. So could Venom be that type of movie? No.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. That's all we need. That's all we need.
What a shocker! I don't know where the 89% comes from, honestly. The movie was pretty rough around the edges. Do you want to see this movie at all?
No.
Okay.
I'm not going to.
So I'm going to go off on it. This movie didn't know what it wanted to be. At times, it was a romance between Eddie Brock and his on-again, off-again girlfriend. At times, it was a comedy. Venom literally said the line at the end of the movie, talking to a thug, "I'm going to eat your legs and arms and then eat your face. You will be a faceless, limbless turd blowing in the wind."
This cannot be made good. It's shameful. It's a shameful, shameful day.
And he said that to end the movie. And I was like, did Venom just say that he's going to be rolling down the street like a turd in the wind? This is a superhero movie.
And that's
movie.
How it ends?
That's how it ends.
Fade to black.
Yeah, it was like a... Well, not immediately. Then he turned... He ate the guy. And then he turned back into Eddie Brock. And he's like, oh, I have a virus. And that's...
That was a bit of a nastiness last night, yes? Some very extreme nastiness, yes? Yes.
Yeah, so basically weirder than that.
That moment, though, encapsulates what was wrong with this movie because tonally it was all over the place. Like I said, romance, comedy, action. It didn't know what it wanted to be. And it felt like at every turn, the producers and the filmmakers made the absolute worst decision. So... Tom Hardy as Eddie Brock, great choice. The tone, and he was fine as an actor. Like, his performance was good. But the character they had, the character they had written for Eddie Brock was so different than the Eddie Brock I remember from the animated Spider-Man series in, like, the 90s and all the video games and everything. Is so just weird. He's almost, like, sniveling and almost, like, is this wisecracking... social justice fighting reporter. And I'm like, it just doesn't jive right. And then Venom is saying things like turd and he's cracking jokes. And at the same time, it's got all this heavy action and this big megalomaniac villain. And it got weird with like just patient rights and pharmaceutical trials. It was very bizarre. Just the whole movie, just grasping at straws, trying to find the proper tone here. And then like just more weird choices, a soundtrack by Eminem for a superhero movie. I don't know. And then
okay.
the weirdest, the weirdest choice. Super spoiler. The mid-credits scene, I was waiting for it all movie. I knew it was coming. I was anticipating it. I was excited for it. You have Venom. You have Carnage. Carnage is the offspring of Venom. The whole movie, I'm waiting for Carnage. Where's Carnage? Where's Carnage? Where's Carnage? They're going to bring Carnage in. There has to be Carnage. He's Venom's biggest villain. And the post-credit scene did not disappoint. They revealed the origins of Carnage. He goes to the prison, and he's going to meet with Cletus Kasady, who obtains the Carnage symbiote. And he turns around, and who is it? It's Woody Harrelson in an orange afro.
And that's Carnage?
And that's the person who becomes Carnage. Me and JB looked at each other. And JB literally put his head in his hands on his lap and and started shaking with laughter.
Aw, poor Bruno.
OMG!
He also said that and left the theater.
He basically did.
OMG!
It was like a little orphan Annie wig. It was terrible. And Woody Harrelson doesn't strike me as a Cletus Kasady Carnage type person. But that's sort of the point. At every turn where they could make a decision, they made decisions like that, using a line like rolling down the street like a turd in the wind, putting a little orphan Annie wig on Woody Harrelson to be a maniac serial killer by making the villain the most deadpan, boring person ever, by having the characters be totally lifeless, by having Eminem do the soundtrack, by having a 15-minute motorcycle chase in the middle of the movie. It just is bonkers. Why is Venom riding a motorcycle? It's so stupid. Is he
Death Rider? Rider? When did that happen?
I don't even know. But at every possible turn, and the biggest sin for Marvel and Spider-Man fans is the fact that this Venom is completely separate from the Spider-Man portion of how the Black Symbiote comes into being. So, top to bottom, just a wholly terrible movie.
That's what Bruno did, too.
That's the turd in the wind.
There you go.
That's the turd in the wind. To give it a rating, I'm not going to be as critical as some of the critics. I'm, you know, not going to give it a 30. I'd give it like a 4.5 out of 10. The action was very good. The symbiote looks really cool. The action was good. The fight scenes, the graphics were good.
But other than that,
the story, I mean, if you want to watch a movie for story, characters, for intrigue, for emotion, this is not the movie for you. If you're watching it because you're a Spider-Man or Venom fan, this is not the movie for you. If there were kids laughing,
Venom shouldn't have kids laughing.
That's the thing. Venom is eating people. He's supposed to be dark and insidious, and there's children laughing. And I'm like, what is this movie supposed to be? Yeah. So if you don't like movies that don't know what they're supposed to be, this is not the movie for you.
All right. Well, there you go. That's Mike's spoiler review of Venom. And yeah, I wasn't really going to see it anyway, but yeah, I think that convinced me.
I wasn't going to, and then I was like, sure, I like Venom. And I helped it have the biggest October weekend release in movie history. So they're going to get a sequel, and it's going to be just as bad.
Well, that'll wrap up the entertainment entree. But don't go anywhere, because coming next, we've got the non-fortune cookie odd news. I'll make Mike laugh in that. Don't worry. So come on back for that. We'll be right back.
Hey, what do you hear? What do you say? This is Vic DiBattista, and you are listening to the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
I'm Nikolai Volkov. I want you to keep listening to Crispy Noodle. Hey, that is order.
Hey, this is Tony Gaga. You got a podcast? You got to go to the podcast I go to. I'll get you this podcast for $2. That's the Crispy Noodle Podcast for $2.
Yeah, we are back here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast. We are done the sports sampler and the entertainment entree, and it is time to prepare the dessert that is coming for you here on this meal for your mind that is the Crispy Noodle Podcast We always end every podcast with the third and final segment. What is it, Mike?
It's time for the Wacky, the Wild, the always entertaining non-fortune cookie odd news.
We've been talking about cool and its ramifications and how it applies to the hip scene. But maybe you could give us some examples now of the opposite of cool, uncool. Just exactly what is uncool?
My nipples look like milk duds.
Holy shnikes.
It's time for the non-fortune cookie odd news.
It's not of this world. I don't know exactly what it is or what it's doing, but this is not human intelligence, okay? It's not human intelligence we're facing!
How you doing? See? I'm doing great.
Mandada bastata. I don't make this stuff up.
I'll take a pound of nuts.
That's a lot of nuts! That'll be $4, baby! You want fries with that?
I've seen the celery dance across the baseball fields.
You had me at meat tornado.
No, go past this. Past this part. Never play this again.
Okay. what does that mean?
And now it's time for the non-fortune cookie odd news.
So sit back, get everything you need to get from the kitchen. Be sure and empty the bladders. Go to the bathroom because you're in for a hell of a ride.
Woo! Odd news.
That's right, everybody. It's time for the non-fortune cookie odd news. Here in this segment, Rich researches the news, he reads the news, and I react to the news. He finds all these weird and wacky stories and keeps them hidden from me, which ensures that all my reactions are my genuine gut reactions to hearing these stories for the very first time. I don't know what's about to happen, you guys don't know what's about to happen, and even Rich doesn't know what's about to happen because these stories always take us down wacky and wild paths, and I'm ready to get started on the journey. So what do you got for us first?
All right, our first story, we're going to Louisiana.
Okay, good old Louisiana.
Yep. And, you know, Halloween's coming up.
Ooh, very spooky.
Right, very spooky. So I think this story is appropriate. After police found methamphetamine in plain view on a nightstand in his home, a Louisiana man actually told police that, quote, it wasn't his and that he actually believes a ghost left the meth there for him. Yes, a ghost.
What need does a ghost have for meth? That's what I want to know. How does the ghost take the meth?
Well, you know,
these would be my questions. Like, literally, I'd be like, okay, I buy that, sir. But tell me, how does the ghost take the meth?
It's that pesky meth ghost.
The meth ghost.
He just comes around and, you know, deposits.
Give me my meth.
Yeah. And, you know, if you don't watch out, he'll visit you at night and give you meth.
Very spooky.
Yes. So,
he'll visit you at night and give you meth. Is that how ghosts work now?
I guess so.
I think you're describing the tooth fairy, Rich.
It's the meth fairy.
It's the meth fairy. I feel like we've done this before.
So, here's how it started. Sheriff's deputies took a call from 59-year-old Michael Altenberry.
Okay.
Very, very fancy name.
Yeah, it seems very fancy. Overly fancy.
Yep. He cursed at cops saying that he needed police presence and said that he was about to get stabbed.
Okay. By who? The ghost or the police?
No, he's on. Just somebody was going to stab him.
Oh, he's was on, calling.
This is the 911 call.
Oh.
Someone's going to stab me.
Okay.
But yet
so
I
he
have,
was
but,
calling 911.
But yet I have enough time to call 911.
Right. Yeah. It's like, could you hold on the stabbing and let me make a quick phone call first?
Yes. And then
you're
you
not going to call the cops, are you? No.
Of course not. So he cursed at cops, telling that he needed police presence immediately. That's when deputies arrived on the scene and saw that there was obviously nobody in the house. deputies quickly determined that Altenberry had not been stabbed. Very good deduction.
Right. Crack detective work there.
Nor were there any intruders that broke inside his home. But while making sure that Altenberry's residence was clear, a deputy spotted, quote, in plain view on a nightstand, there was an open brown paper bag that held a couple grams of methamphetamine. A subsequent search of Altenberry himself also yielded a pill bottle that contained another gram of methamphetamine on him. So, yeah, he definitely has some in his possession.
No, it was the ghosts.
Well, so when asked where the meth came from, Altenberry said that, quote, it's not mine, and that, quote, a ghost must have placed the meth on me.
Of course.
Hang on, Robin. I'm going to start up the most powerful car engine in the world. Are you ready?
Yeah, I sure wish those ghosts would leave.
Are you ready, Robin?
All right, this is a car engine.
Ready?
Ooh. The best Who's Line clip ever.
I thought you would like that.
Oh my god.
The two ladies that did not know how to do sound clips. Sound effects, so all she did was ooh.
Hang on, Robin. I'm gonna start up the most powerful car engine in the world. Are you ready?
Yeah. I sure wish those ghosts would leave.
Are you ready, Robin?
All right, this is a car engine.
Ready?
I love how they just keep going too.
Ooh.
Like they don't listen. To
I sure
choose...
hope those ghosts would leave.
Yeah, my favorite part of that.
Maybe if
skit...
they kept giving you meth, maybe you would be saying that.
Right, exactly.
I sure hope those ghosts would leave.
You know what it is? Also, is this person was raised with those women?
Yeah. So everything is ghosts.
Yeah, he thinks there's ghosts all the time.
How would you bust a meth ghost? Like how would you be like, no, stop it.
By calling the Ghostbusters, of course.
Yeah, but what are they going to do?
Trap it.
Here's the ghost. Oh, I'm assuming that, like, the ghost has, like, the power of meth heads behind him.
What is the power of meth heads, Rich? What is this magical superpower you're envisioning?
Just those crazy meth heads that are just going to, like, come at you with insane amounts of energy.
So the ghost has insane amounts of energy, or it can summon meth heads who have insane amounts of energy?
Both.
This is like a crazy video game boss fight right now.
Yeah.
The meth ghost.
If a ghost has the power to dispense methamphetamine, I would not want to mess with it.
What do you say? Make it sound like the ghost is just crapping out bricks of meth.
Yeah, as it flies along.
Yeah, just plop, plop, plop.
Math.
You know how Slimer in the Ghostbuster leaves behind slime?
Yeah.
This is what the meth ghost is. As he phases through walls, he just leaves behind meth everywhere.
If meth Slimer hits you, you're instantly high.
Wow, that's a pretty powerful ghost right there.
Yeah.
Just flies through, and it's like, oh my god, I just took all the meth.
Ah!
You go from zero to meth head in 3 seconds.
Unfortunately, though, the cops did not believe the ghost story. And Altenberry was arrested on a felony narcotics possession charge and misdemeanor criminal mischief count. He's being held.
What a shame. What a shame they didn't believe him. That upstanding citizen who's just plagued by the supernatural.
Yeah. He's being held in lieu of a $5,000 bond.
Well, did the ghost get its meth back?
No, it's right now at the police station, so he's going to have to visit the police station.
The real victim here is the ghost, okay? Yeah. Nobody thinks about ghosts and all these ghost crimes. Shameful.
Yeah, very shameful. Let's go to New York City in our next story here. A New York City man that was charged with setting a massive blaze that damaged more than 135 cars at a Brooklyn shopping center told investigators that, quote, he was motivated to start the fire because he believed the parked vehicles were being used for, quote, sinful sexual activity.
And I know who it's coming from because I backtraced it. And I know who's emailing and who's doing it. And you've been reported to the cyber police. Consequences will never be the same.
23-year-old Evan... Yes.
He burned how many cars?
135 vehicles at a Brooklyn shopping center.
And all of them were being used for, what was it,
sinful sexual activity.
All of them.
All of them.
All at the same time.
All of them.
All at once.
Boy, yeah, it's a sex fest.
Just every car.
Yes, at one point or another.
It's a drive-in sex fest. It's like, pull on up, guys.
Bam.
Bam.
Time to get going here.
This cannot be made good. It's shameful. It's a shameful, shameful day!
23-year-old Evan Stevens was named in a federal complaint charging him with starting Monday's seven-alarm blaze inside the garage at Kings Plaza Shopping Center. The garage was also used by local car dealerships to store vehicles, so unfortunately that made it even worse.
Yeah, that's not good.
Initially, he started off with a Mercedes-Benz, but then the fire spread to other vehicles.
As fire does.
As he departed the garage on Monday morning, Stevens performed double middle fingers towards a surveillance camera on his way out.
Okay.
Oh, now you fucked up. You have fucked up now.
I think it's interesting they felt compelled to add that information.
Well, I guess that's
like
how
it's
they,
crucial to the investigation.
I guess that's how they caught him. They probably used the surveillance video, and there you go. He's given the bird double bird.
Double middle fingers.
Yeah. That's not very Christian of him.
Yeah, the sinful sexual acts, but then he's flipping off security cameras and setting, I'm pretty sure, it doesn't say it explicitly, but I'm pretty sure God wouldn't be okay with people setting fire to things.
Yeah.
You know, on the list of things God's okay with, I imagine arson is not included there.
Right. I don't think
I can't imagine God being like, yes, totally burn everything.
Right. I love fire.
Although, in contrast, God does like fire. The burning
Old Testament God is.
Well, which God is the best God? I think Old Testament God is the best God.
Well,
he has the most fire and the most floods.
All right, so Evan Stevens obviously only read the Old Testament. That's it. He never got to Jesus in the New Testament then.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a traditionalist.
Yeah.
So he goes back to the original one, not the remake.
The New Testament's a remake?
The New Testament is a remake of God, yes.
Oh, interesting.
It's going straight to hell. It's the unnecessary 2010 remake.
So anyway, after he was apprehended on Monday afternoon, Stevens told police that he routinely visited the garage and browsed the vehicles that were owned in the garage, and he claimed that he saw others acting in sinful sexual activity and that it made him very angry.
Oh, now you fucked up. You have fucked up now.
Wow.
Why would it make you angry?
Yeah.
Just pull up a lawn chair and enjoy the show.
Right. Yeah, or go on a corner and see if you can find someone to
go on
with
a
you.
Corner.
You know, maybe you can. Obviously, if this garage is like the sex fest of New York City, maybe.
It's got a big neon sign out front.
Maybe there's a.
Car dealership and sex fest. I mean, that's a 2-for-1 combo you can't turn down.
I think that's a great idea for a car dealership. You know, while you're waiting.
Is it like one of those weird deals where it's like, oh, if you come into a test drive, you get a free hooker? And
yeah,
it's like, wait,
yeah,
what?
Yeah, while your car is getting serviced, you know, get a BJ.
So are you.
Yeah, you're getting. Yes, ta-da!
Yeah, the car's getting the oil changed, so are you.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a fluid exchange there. cleaning the pipes out. I don't know anything about cars. I don't even know if these are car things.
Yes.
I don't know.
Your car and you. Free
you're
fluid exchanges.
Whack the flange. I don't know.
Free fluid exchanges.
Free fluid exchanges.
For everybody. Car and people.
Oh my gosh, that would be amazing. I'd actually take my car in more often. Like, you were just here last week. I know.
I need another one.
I need another one. A lot of wear
backed
and tear.
Up.
A lot of backs off. Oh, God.
So anyway, this guy apparently, I guess he has a mental inventory because he said that others were using the garage for sinful sexual activity. For the firefighters, though, this was not funny, though. The blaze took over 8 hours to extinguish.
Wow.
And was battled by hundreds of New York City firefighters.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, he set fire to cars,
which have gasoline in them.
Yeah, exactly.
And could explode.
Right. And it's in a parking, what is it, a parking garage?
Yeah.
So there's lots of cars close by and multiple stories. And, yeah, it's just,
Yeah, not a good idea.
No.
Stevens is now facing a felony arson charge. So, unfortunately, I don't think he's getting off the hook on this one.
No.
Probably
even though he does have fiery Old Testament God on his side.
Yeah. He kept inventory or something.
Yeah.
I wonder if he kept, like, a ledger of, like, how many times he saw, you know?
It's like,
I highly doubt it was once, you know?
Right. That would be crazy if you just see it once and you're like, that's it. I gotta set fire. Like, are the people still in the car when you're setting the fire? I'm not entirely sure, because he says he goes and visits it all the time.
Yeah.
And he said that he's seen
There's
it there.
There's a Subway there. He loves to eat at Subway.
Goes to Subway, looks at the cars. Sounds like a rip-roaring good time.
And then he pulls out his notebook and checks out how many cars have had sexual activity in them.
Right. Dear Diary, I saw 3 cars a-rocking, and I did not go knocking. But God, I will set fire to them later.
God is not happy.
God is not happy.
But I am, though, because I just ate a Subway sandwich. all right, how about we get into... I got 4 Florida stories here. Yeah, Florida on fire.
Now, who is this guy in Florida?
It's Florida, and they're crazy.
All right, and this is going to sound similar, but this is actually a whole completely different story here.
Okay.
A gas station owner in Florida actually has had to print out a sign asking people not to warm their urine samples in his microwave.
Back in a moment, my dear, we have to expel some urine.
What? It has happened again.
Oh my God, you're pulling out Simpsons clips?
Yeah, man. You gotta love the Simpsons.
I love it.
Parul Patel, the owner of On the Fly Convenience Store, what a name, says that he got tired of people bringing their urine containers. Random people would just walk in. They would come in with their containers and microwave the urine in my store.
That's so gross. And yeah, we have had a story exactly like this before.
That is because the gas station is within walking distance of a Quest Diagnostics and a LabCorp facility. Both companies offer drug testing services and collect urine samples.
Back in a moment, my dear, we have to expel some urine.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. It just seems weird to me. They let you bring in your own urine.
I guess if you
Isn't part of the urine sample that you have to pee there?
I guess if you can't produce it, like, on command?
Just drink some water! It's like, oh, sorry, I can't pee. Like, no, you totally can. Just drink some water. If you know you're going for a urine sample. I had to do a urine sample before I got the current job that I'm at now, and it's super weird, because, like, don't flush the toilet. You gotta fill up 2 tubes. I was like, 2 tubes? Better drink some more water. It's simple. It's something you do every day.
If Mr. Burns can do it, everybody can do it.
Exactly.
Back in a moment, my dear, we have to expel some urine.
Yes.
Allowing people to bring in their own urine just seems weird, because then they're going to go to convenience stores and microwave it.
Yep, like this story.
Microwaving it. I guess the thing is they'll kill...
The drugs?
The traces of drugs and alcohol in it.
But obviously...
I don't know if it works
I don't think
way.
It does.
I don't think science... does that.
Yeah, science does not do this.
No.
Patel says that, quote, we are trying to stop these kinds of people. They've become so aggressive to us. He says that one woman was actually combative when the woman saw his sign on the microwave. He said that, quote, she started cursing at me and says that there shouldn't be a sign that says you can't use this for this kind of purpose.
I would just politely turn around and be like, can I microwave my feces in your
microwave? How about this? Why don't you get a microwave?
Yeah.
And why don't you you microwave your own urine on your microwave?
Right. What bodily fluids am I allowed to stick in your home appliances?
Yeah.
You know? Like, why does this person think that, like, the convenience store microwave is, it's fair game?
You
just put whatever you want in there. You know? It's ridiculous.
I can't believe that she believes, like, what's wrong with this?
Right, exactly. Microwave it at your house.
Yeah.
And keep it in
How about start with don't microwave your urine?
How about, let's back up even further. How about not be in a situation where you're taking so many drugs that you're afraid that you're going to fail your drug tests?
Yeah, that would be a good start. Oh, my God.
Oh, jeez. You know what they should do? This is brilliant. This is brilliant. I just solved so many problems. Put a microwave in Quest Diagnostics. No, really, really. And advertise it. Say, microwave your urine here. There are people, I guarantee you, we've been doing the odd news for so long, there are people stupid enough to take advantage of it. And then you know. You don't even have to run the sample. You already know. You're like,
they're doing drugs.
Sir, you can leave. You failed.
Yep.
Simple, right?
You're trying to hide it.
I'm a genius.
Back in a moment, my dear, we have to Expel some urine.
Just cut out the middleman. Put the microwave right at Quest Diagnostics. You'll catch like 80% of the people that were going to do it anyway.
You're going to save time and money.
Exactly.
Parul Patel says that he's going to keep the sign up and hopefully deter more people from microwaving.
Just get rid of your microwave. Just tell people.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, this is his own shop. This isn't like a 7-Eleven or anything.
Right.
Yeah, why isn't it?
I guess the microwave is there for the customer's convenience, I guess. I guess that they buy something and they can microwave it right there.
Put it
behind the counter and be like, no, I'll microwave it for you. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's too much to do while you're juggling other things. But
I mean, this is his own store. Like, if it was a 7-Eleven, I bet you, like, a 7-Eleven has, like, a thing that says you have to have a microwave in a 7-Eleven or something.
Yeah.
But, like, this is your own store, on-the-fly convenience store.
Yeah.
So, yeah, make your own rules up. Be like, no, huh?
I can't believe this is the second time we've had a store where people try to microwave urine.
Yes. It has happened again. Why?
I have no hope or faith in humanity.
Yeah.
People are peeing into cups and trying to microwave it.
To try and get out of
because they've just done so many drugs.
Yeah.
They can't pass. You know, it's not like, I guess some of them might be surprised if you're like on probation or something. But usually if you're applying for a job or you're, you know, some government position or something, you know it's going to happen, you know? And some jobs have you do regular tests.
Yeah.
And if it's a surprise test, you're not going to have a chance to pee in a cup and take it down to the convenience store. These are clearly
tests that have been planned. I'm really hungry. I need to go to 7-Eleven.
Right, exactly.
Give me like 5 minutes.
I know I'm in the middle of this urine test, but I really need to get a snack right now.
Yes. So help me out here.
Back in a moment, my dear. We have to expel some urine.
It's just insane all around. Stop microwaving your pee.
Yeah, why is this a thing? All right, another Florida story here for you.
Now, who is this guy in Florida?
It's Florida, and they're crazy.
This one is pretty funny to imagine. A Florida man is accused of frequently hanging out on a boat that wasn't his, and even taking potential girlfriends out on it for dates.
We running this, let's go. I'm on a boat. Everybody look at me, cause I'm sailing on a boat. I'm on a boat. I'm on a boat. Take a good hard look at the mother boat.
Yes. Yes. He's pretty much fronting that this is his boat, but it's not his.
I love this story for the sheer fact that we get to listen to the song.
Cause I'm on a boat. Picture drink. I'm on a boat. We drinking Santana champ cause it's so crisp. I got my swim trunks and my flipping floppies. I'm flipping burgers, you at Kinko straight flipping cabbage. I'm riding on
So Naples police
how did he pull this off? Did he steal the boat, or is it just parked at like the dock?
Yeah, it's parked at the dock and he's just going in and saying, oh yeah, this is mine.
What happens when somebody's like, why don't we take it out? And he's like, no.
No.
I don't know how to drive it. Like,
it's too late at night.
It's
too late.
I can't. Well, it's got lights. Yeah, but
I'm too tired.
Yeah.
I don't know. So here's a story. Naples police said that their detectives arrested Florida man Ronald Burton across the street from the Naples Bay Resort on Wednesday night. A boat cleaner at the resort reported seeing him leave the boat numerous times over the past month. Detectives interviewed Burton's girlfriend. She said that they went on the boat several times and drank together, and she thought that Burton owned the boat. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, he's pretending like he did.
Yeah, so there you go. Why not? It's his boat.
Get your towels ready. It's about to go down. Everybody in the place, hit the open deck. But stay on your mother. Let's go. I'm on a boat. I'm on a boat. Everybody look at me because I'm sailing on a boat. I'm on a boat. I'm on a boat. Take a good hard look at the mother boat.
Yeah. So, so that's when they called the real boat owner. The real boat owner then visited the boat and said that, quote, there were empty liquor bottles everywhere. Food missing, her $300 cooler stolen, and I don't know how this is possible, quote, $1,000 worth of damage done to the toilets.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I don't
know. No, I think it was quite a bit bigger than that.
Yeah, I don't know how you get...
Unless it was a super expensive toilet and he just went in there with a hammer and was like, I just want to wreck stuff. Man.
How do you get up to $1,000 worth of damage done? That's like the plumbing is messed up.
Yeah, I mean, either he is going in there with the express idea of just wrecking the bathroom, or he had way too much Taco Bell for lunch.
Yeah, either that one, or maybe this one.
My bunghole, it goes rakakaka, rakakaka, and then sometimes my bunghole goes...
So, yeah, it's probably
one of those two. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Burton also has previous charges of fraud. So this isn't his first time.
He's been stealing, well, not stealing, he's been taking people to many different boats.
Yeah. He's accused of, he's also accused of lying to officers about his personal information. So I guess he gave a fake name. But you know what? Yeah, you're in the hole this far.
You might as well go all out.
Yeah, of course this is my boat. Yeah. I'm Charles Paffywalker the II, of course.
Of course.
Yes.
The venerable Charles Paffywalker?
Paffywalker, yes.
Paffywalker.
Yes. This is my boat, of course.
Of course. You, of course, know my father.
Yes. His name is Sir Loin Frank Minnow.
Why is his name different than... I don't even know.
I was adopted.
I was adopted, yes. Represented the perfect union of the Minnow and the Paffywhacker families.
Yes, it was excellent. I was a miracle child. And now I own this boat.
It comes with the territory.
Excuse me.
Being a proud Minnow Pefferwhacker.
Excuse me, I have to use the bathroom.
Boom.
Yeah.
My bunghole, it goes rakakaka, rakakaka, and then sometimes my bunghole goes
So.
People on the lake are like, where did all these waves come from? Oh, Paffywhacker used the bathroom. Paffywhacker.
Paffywhacker.
What name is that?
And he did a lot of syllables, so that's what he came up with.
I love it. I feel like we need to make him a character now, Paffywhacker.
Yes, of course. This is my boat, and I have some digestive problems. Please excuse me. All right. Well, I got some more Florida stories here for you.
Now, who is this guy in Florida?
It's Florida, and they're crazy.
A Florida man was arrested yesterday morning for masturbating in public. He told police...
Yep, that makes sense.
He told police that the reason why he did it was because, quote, I don't know, it just helps with my anxiety.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
Specifically doing it in public?
Yes.
Helps his anxiety?
Apparently, which seems counterintuitive.
It does. It does. Don't you get like stage fright? Like, oh, I hope I perform adequately.
But except if I'm completely naked.
Right.
Then I'm like, A-okay.
That's just...
Look at my wang. That's what it is. All the eyes go to the wang and not my face. So I'm A-okay.
Okay. There you go.
A-okay.
That makes sense now. Of course.
Hello.
It helps with my anxiety.
Cops allege that 20-year-old Carlos Salvador was naked when a witness spotted him at 2:30 in the morning inside a laundromat at Clearwater, Florida. He goes to a laundromat, but he's already naked.
Well, that makes sense, actually. He's doing his laundry.
No, he's naked. That's what I'm saying.
No, how do you know he didn't take his clothes off and put them in the wash?
Because it says he arrived naked and started masturbating.
Oh, he arrived naked?
Yeah.
Maybe he was picking clothes up.
I don't think... I'm going with you. There's no clothes there.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Maybe he was looking for clothes.
Oh, he's stealing clothes?
Maybe. With a raging erection. he just walks in. I'm very excited to get a new pair of clothes.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
But honestly, what else are you excited about at a laundromat? You show up and you're like, oh man, look at all those spinning clothes.
Something's gotta fit me.
I just gotta...
It's just numbers.
It's just the numbers game, yeah. Oh, man.
So in a 911 call, witnesses reported that the male suspect was fully erect and was touching himself right out in the open. When police arrived at the laundromat, Salvador was seated inside and watching pornography loudly on his phone.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
Oh, so yeah. He wasn't even there for the clothes. He was just watching porn on his phone.
Yeah.
Now, why can't you do that in the privacy of your own home?
Because it's helping him with his okay. anxiety.
Okay, fine. We'll take that leap of logic. But why the laundromat specifically?
Yeah.
There's other public places you can go to that, I mean, I guess he specifically needed people? Was it just being out in the open, or was it, like, specifically people around him?
I don't know. It doesn't say in the news report, but I guess it was people around him.
So the laundromat was the only place that had people.
It was 2:30 in the morning. Where else do you go? The bars are closed.
Go to a McDonald's that's open 24/7. Go to the drive-thru and just have the time of your life.
Yeah. This is my Big Mac.
Wow. That was... Yeah. With my special sauce.
Yeah. You don't want to know what my special sauce is. So during police questioning, Salvador admitted that he likes to do this and says that, quote, it helps with his anxiety. He was arrested for exposure of sexual organs, which is just a misdemeanor. So he was later released. So he could do... Good job, Florida. He's back out there.
Yeah, I don't know. In Florida, they're like, we got bigger problems on our hands.
Yeah. All right, and I got one more Florida story here to wrap up the odd news for this week.
Now, who is this guy in Florida?
It's Florida, and they're crazy.
A spat over sauce on lo mein noodles helped land a 32-year-old Florida man behind bars, according to police.
I'm gonna f***ing kill you, motherfucker, old style.
That's definitely the hill to die on.
Yes,
and is the sauce on the noodles,
and it's appropriate for a crispy noodle, right?
You know, yeah, exactly.
Florida man Thomas Quierga,
what a name!
Yeah, Quierga was arrested after he was convicted of a battery charge. The Florida man said that he struck a cook after an argument over soy sauce on his lo mein noodles. Yeah, this is straight to the point. Yep.
Oh, now you fucked up. You have fucked up now.
What was his problem? That there was soy sauce or there wasn't soy sauce or not enough or too much?
The deputy spoke with Quierga. He said that he approached the stir-fry section of the restaurant and asked the cook for, quote, a non-spicy soy sauce. Quierga,
soy sauce isn't spicy.
Quierga reported that a man from behind the counter ran screaming at him. Did I skip a sentence? I feel like I skipped a sentence. At some point, there needs to be an escalation here.
Maybe it's just that weird. Maybe it's that crazy. The cook is like, I'm done with this guy. Asking for non-spicy soy sauce when soy sauce isn't spicy.
He said that the man demanded he leave the restaurant and grabbed his arm. Quierga said that when the man grabbed his arm, he slapped the man's hand away. Witnesses told deputies that the victim was on the phone and told Quierga to leave when he slapped him in the face.
Wait, what?
Wait, yeah, there's too many he's.
Also, I thought that he left the restaurant.
Yeah.
And now he's back and slapping people in the face?
Yeah.
So confused.
Did I miss a I think I missed a sentence.
You just copy paste half a story.
Whoops.
You're like, I'm done. I'm done, Florida. They're attacking each other because they hate living in Florida. They've given up. We're at the point now where Florida is cannibalizing itself.
Yes.
It's like, we live in Florida and I hate it and I hate you and I'm going to fight you. They're not even mad about the noodles, Rich. That's what's so confusing about the story. Is it started out about the noodles, but now...
So I think I get this.
Okay.
So the cook starts screaming at him that you
can't have non-spicy soy sauce. It's not a thing.
Yeah. So then Quierga gets mad and grabs the cook's arm.
Okay.
And
well,
he
can't cook then.
Yeah. So then when he did that, he slapped Quierga's hand away.
Okay. So the chef slapped the guy's hand away.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Quierga... slapped the cook in the face?
Right, and ran away.
Okay. Where did his family
go? So double slap.
It's a double slap.
So, yeah. Well, he. Yeah. So
is his family still there?
Well, his family's there. Yeah. This is the weirdest story ever.
So he just ran away, and his family's like,
"Whoops!
I guess you can take that last item off the off the order."
So that's when they called 911 because he did leave. He left in a Lincoln Navigator with dark rims.
Did he take his family with him?
No, he didn't. He left the family there.
He's like, bye, family. You're on your own now.
I don't like this place anymore.
Yeah. Including my family. He just goes to the manager. You can have them. The manager's like, what am I going to do with a family at a restaurant?
Cuergo was arrested based on the report of the Lincoln Navigator with the dark rims. He was taken to the local county jail and was released later that night.
Wow.
That was such a weird story.
That was super weird. At first, I thought the chef was just attacking this dude.
I'm surprised the chef got visited. Like, I mean, I could get frustrated.
The chef only slapped his hand away. I mean, if somebody's grabbing you, you know, you're like, you know, hey, get off, and you whack them.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that part. Yeah, he actually grabbed his arm. Yeah, I need the cook.
Oh, what did he think he was going to accomplish? He's like, don't use non-spicy soy sauce. And the chef is like,
I'm physically going to take your hand so you don't pour the sauce.
But the chef is like, there's no such thing as non-spicy soy sauce. At that point, the guy's like, oh, well, that solves my problem. But instead, he's so adamant in wanting non-spicy soy sauce, he doesn't accept the fact that it literally doesn't exist.
Yeah, soy sauce is just non-spicy in and of itself.
It's like, I don't want lasagna-flavored ice cream. And they're like, don't worry, it's not a thing.
Don't
give it to me! It's like, we can't. It doesn't exist. He just grabs the poor ice cream dude.
Yeah.
You know?
And grabs his arm.
Right. It's that, like, he's angry because the chef isn't using something that doesn't exist.
Yeah. Wouldn't agree. Yeah.
Wouldn't agree to not use a non-spicy soy sauce.
God, that is so confusing.
Isn't it?
I don't know.
This whole story is very strange.
I'm going to go with the fact that the chef had no idea what he was talking about.
Yeah.
And things got way out of control.
Yeah, the chef's like, what is happening?
That sounds to me more Florida.
Yeah.
Now, who is this guy in Florida?
And there you go. That's what I have for you this week in the non-Fortune Cookie Odd News. Confusing all of us to end the show. But now it's time to go over all that we've learned on this episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast. What have we learned?
As your body grows bigger,
your mind must flower.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
All right, Mike, what have you learned?
Well, I've learned that regardless of whether or not something is real, you have to stand your ground and fight against it anyway.
Yes.
Even if it's something you imagined.
You have to be right.
Right, exactly. Being right is the only thing that matters in this world.
Yeah.
Even if what you're arguing about doesn't exist
at all,
you still have to be right about it.
Yeah.
To the point of physically assaulting a chef. Because that makes sense.
Sure. That's the logic in Florida.
I've also learned that I think people in Florida are just so fed up with living in Florida that they just attack each other for living in Florida.
They'll find any reason to launch a punch.
Right. Like arguing about non-existent soy sauce.
Yeah.
I also learned about this magnificent character, Sir Charles Pefiwecker II.
Excellent.
He's a brand new character Rich created. He's wealthy and has chronic bowel problems. He's got everything you want in a classic dramatic role.
Yeah. Excuse me, I have to go to the bathroom, but please admire my boat while I'm away.
There you go.
Of course this is my boat.
Charles Pefiwecker, everyone.
I just can't pilot it right now. I have to go to use the bathroom.
Yes. That's why he couldn't drive it. He's constantly in the bathroom.
Right. There you go.
Poor Pefiwecker.
I have IBS.
Yes. Oh, my God. Maybe he has IBS because people keep microwaving pee in microwave convenience store microwave ovens.
It's happening again.
Why? It's so gross.
Yeah.
I know places where you're not allowed to microwave shellfish because people are allergic to it. And people are sticking pee in these microwaves.
I have a new rule. Don't trust any microwaves that you don't know where they came from.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to start bringing my own microwave everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere I go. Just, excuse me, I gotta get my microwave and bring it in.
I don't trust people now.
I don't trust people at all. Maybe it's because they're following the you know, the unnecessary 2010s remake of the Old Testament. This New Testament. Don't you hate all these Hollywood remakes?
Yeah, there's too many of them.
The original was fine.
Who's
like
this
it was.
Jesus guy? This,
I know, they introduced these characters at the 11th hour. It's,
yeah.
So many plot holes. Stick with the fire and the brimstone.
Yeah.
The classics, you know? So frustrating, Hollywood. Come up with something original, guys.
Yeah. And there you go. That's what we've learned on this episode of the Crispy Rule Podcast.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Yes, sir.
I'm if I know what we did.
And there you go, folks. Another great episode of the Crispy Little Podcast in the books. We're getting to the point now where the odd news is even confusing me.
Yeah. We have reached peak odd news, I think.
Yeah. Dear God. But if you like what you heard, make sure you check out our website for past episodes and more information about us. Our website is thecrispynoodle.com. Make sure you like us on Facebook so you get all of our news updates. And you follow us on Twitter. All you got to do is search The Crispy Noodle for Facebook and Twitter, and you should be able to find us. And we're also on Instagram at The Crispy Noodle Podcast.
That's right. Also, remember to subscribe to our YouTube channel where you can find videos, interviews, best bits, and a whole lot more. But most importantly, remember to subscribe to The Crispy Noodle Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, where you get the latest episodes downloaded for free every Thursday. So once again, make sure you search for, download, and subscribe to The Crispy Noodle Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher.
That's right, and we also have a SoundCloud page where we have the mini noodles, the best bits of the Crispy Noodle Podcast that are shrunk down into a quick 2 to 3 minute promo that you can easily share with family and friends and random people in Florida or random naked people in your laundromat. The craziness that is the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
That's right. Make sure you share it with everyone. So many ways to get in touch with and share the Crispy Noodle Podcast, but if you want to get in touch with us individually on Twitter, I'm at Mikey Costanzo, MikeyCostanzo.
And I am at Rich Liebig, RichLiebig. Find us on the Twitters, let us know what's happening, comment on anything that you heard on this week's episode. If there's any news stories that you think we need to keep an eye out for, let us know. Any sound clips? Sure, send them my way. I found out about the Ganoa Gano clip for Graham Gano's clip online. So, yeah, send it
all
away.
Send us everything.
Yeah,
everything.
Why not? Especially anything Spanish and out there. I'll listen to it.
All right. There you go.
So, there you go. But for now, that will wrap things up. This has been the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us be the Crispy Noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news. I think it's going to do it. We'll see you guys next week.
See you guys.
Later!
Some of us have great stories, pretty stories that take place at lakes with boats and friends and noodle salad. A lot of people, that's their story. Good times, noodle salad.
Hello, comrade. You are receiving transmission from Mother Russia. I am here to tell you, best podcast of 2018 is going to be Crispy Noodle Podcast, okay? This is the kind of thing that tickle my ball when nothing else will tickle my ball in Siberia, okay? Crispy Noodle Podcast is best thing for 2018. You listen to Crispy Noodle Podcast. This is the show that is tickling my balls. The Crispy Noodle Podcast 2018. Is you must listen, okay? Okay, yes, good. Goodbye, comrade.